Welcome back to the Angletopia podcast.
We missed you.
There was a hiatus, unplanned hiatus.
Yes.
For several reasons. One, the flu went through the entire Thomas household for most of March, so that was fun.
Like legitimate influenza. Yeah. And we had our flu shots, but we still got it. And we're not starting a debate on vaccines or anything like that. Just saying. Yeah,
so we were felled. Yes. There was actually, at one point, there was a week where I almost didn't publish anything on Angletopia, and I didn't even do the newsletter, which is the most important thing we do every week. I was just so sick.
Well, what was crazy is you actually had people, like, reach out to us, like, hey, are you guys okay?
Yeah, so thanks for the concern. People were genuinely worried, like...
That was super sweet.
Yeah, normally, like, you kind of think you're just screaming into the void when you run a publication like this on the internet. You kind of just like, does anybody actually read it? And so to get messages like that, it's nice.
You guys noticed we were gone.
And a couple other things, some big life changes. I finished my book, Adventures in Angletopia, and then I started the editing process. Stay tuned for news on that.
I started a new job. And if you have seen on our social media, I too have wrote a book. Although mine is not of Anglophilia, it's romance. So it's really exciting. A lot of writing, a lot of really good life changes going on, and
busy.
Yeah, really busy.
Trying to take Angletopia in the new direction we talked about last year. It's still in process. So
yeah, but why don't we dig right in, because everybody's busy. So yeah,
this podcast isn't about us, it's about Britain. And if you hear a dog whine, it's our puppy who's in his crate because
he eats everything in sight
and he's disruptive during the podcast. We managed to have the kids outside of the house, but we couldn't get rid of the puppy for the afternoon. So so if you hear him, he's fine. He's in his crate, his happy place.
So we decided today to do, drum roll,
our Britain bucket lists. I hate that term, bucket lists.
Yeah.
And the movie is terrible.
Oh, you went there.
But it's the best way to summarize what this is. We've been at this since 2007 now. And there are things that are kind of like life goals that I really want to do in Britain. There's things that I've actually done that I did an article a couple years ago on my top 10 things I wanted to do, and I've done like half of them so far. So I'm a big proponent in setting goals and achieving them. So when we make a list like this, I fully intend to do everything on this list. But this list is the long game. This is like for the rest of our lives. So some things are kind of out there. Some things are very simple. It's just a matter of booking a trip and doing it. Some things that require physical training. Some will require growing courage.
You become a British ninja.
Yeah. So, but I thought this would make an interesting topic for us to go back and forth, because it's no secret around here that she's an Anglophile by proxy. She's kind of been dragged along. I'm the crazy one. So, but over time, she's developed things that she likes to do there. And so it'd be interesting to see if there's anything that she wants to make sure we do sometime, because I will gladly book a trip to do something she wants to do just so I can go.
Well, and I want to say, though, that through all of our travels, it's become my second home. Like, when we land in Britain, I feel like it's the same feeling as when we land in Chicago. It's like, oh, I'm home.
So this list is very personal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're not seeking to, like, what would be to compare what would be on your list. Like, this is kind of things that...
But you're free to comment.
Yeah, you're free to comment and let us know what you'd want to do. But in the end, sorry, our future watching machine is talking to us. You know, it's very much things that we really want to do, and it's very personal. They're very personal choices. There will be things that maybe you would want to do that we'll leave off. So that's where the comment section comes in handy. If you are looking for inspiration for things to do on your Britain bucket list, I recommend getting this map. the Great British Adventure Map, which we sell in our online store. Shameless plug alert. Although the shameless plug would make more sense if we actually had any in stock, which we don't. But I'm going to be getting more, so go join the waiting list. This map is just filled with adventures in Britain and things that would be on the bucket list. We used this to plan our drive from Lands End to John O'Groats last year, which was on my list. And it's filled with railway journeys and walking journeys, and highly recommend it.
You could spend hours looking at that and still find something new each time you open it.
So I'm going to, I'll put a link in the show notes to this. So get on the waiting list for when we get more, because this is one of our best sellers.
Which, and it should be just for those on the waiting list, timetable ideas of when it might be back in stock?
In the next month.
Oh, okay. So not very long.
Yeah, in the next month. I just have to place the order. I need the money to pay for it. So.
Okay.
So, I'm sure I have more things than you, so why don't you start with one?
Oh, look how chivalrous. So, this is really kind of corny, but I really have a thing for, like, really grand, regal, and stately hotels. Like, and I think London does it really, really well. Like, you have the Savoy, you have the Ritz, you have, is it the Dorchester? We have this thing. It's silly, because these are very exclusive, very high-end hotels that we cannot afford to stay in. So instead of being able to afford to stay in one of them, a lot of these hotels are very famous for their cocktail bars. So it's been a tradition that I've started that we go to, we pick one hotel per trip, and we'll go have a cocktail in the cocktail bar. So I would, but as fun as that is, and I highly, highly recommend it, it is great to people watch. I have had some of the best cocktails and appetizers of my whole life.
Which ones have we done?
We've done the American Bar at the Savoy.
Yes, classic.
We did the Rivoli Bar at the Ritz.
Yes.
I had a legit drink with gold flakes in it. It was the most beautiful thing. It was almost too pretty to drink. And then we did the Dorchester.
Yes.
I can't remember which bar, though. It's the big bar at the front that faces Hyde Park.
But I don't think we would go back there now because of the whole Sultan of Brunei thing. He owns it.
Oh, well.
George wouldn't approve.
He means George Clooney.
She's a big George Clooney fan.
But, that being said, I would love to actually stay in one of these big hotels, like where there's fresh flowers in the room, and not just stay in one of these hotels. Like
the experience.
Yeah, I don't want to just be an interloper, because then that's just uncomfortable. Like, but like really do it in style. Like that would be, what an amazing experience. We saw a thing, wasn't it the Savoy, where if you stay in a room that is of a certain level, like they give you a butler.
Yeah, that's insane.
It is insane. It is indulgence at the highest level. But just to have an experience like that, and I just have to say, if I'm going to go anywhere in the world and have a butler, I want a British butler.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's the gold standard of butlers, right?
So
that's mine. That's like a two-parter. To stay at one of the big, fancy, landmark London hotels, and to finish our cocktail crawl in the big, fancy London hotel bars. But, like, they have to be, I want to make clear that they have to be, like, landmark.
Yeah, I mean, there's 1,000 cocktail bars in London.
Exactly. So. Which, and I'm sure they're all great, but
it has to be something that appeared in a movie or a book at one point.
Well, let's put it this way. If you, like, did a shift, like, you know, during the Blitz, and you were like, man, I need a drink, and you knew that bar was open, you're on the list.
I should say, I don't actually drink alcohol ever. So when we go to these things, I usually get tea. So I have a good judgment on who has good tea in all the bars, cocktail bars in London.
Who has the best tea then? Come on.
I think the American Bar had the best tea so far.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right, so.
So my number one is probably the one most likely to happen the soonest, I hope. Because it's been one that I've been working towards for I've been banging on about it for like 5 years now. It's pathetic, actually.
Oh, I know where, exactly where this is going.
There are many zombie dreams on Angletopia of trips ungone on. And one of them is, I really want to walk Hadrian's Wall. It's about an 80-mile walk from coast to coast in northern England. It follows the route of the wall built by Emperor Hadrian, most of which is still there in ruined form. And it's a moderately strenuous walk that takes about a week. And it takes in some of the most beautiful countryside in Britain. And, you know, there are companies that can help you plan it. And you basically just check in at the B&B at one end, and then your bags follow you to each B&B along the way. And I think the longest stretch is like 16 miles. So, but there's a problem with wanting to do Hadrian's Wall. And that problem is that I'm very lazy and I don't walk. So I work from home and I live in an area where I can't like walk outside my front door or go for a walk. I'll get run over by a car. So I don't really walk that much currently. And so if I try to do the Hadrian's Wall walk tomorrow, I will probably die in the process because I'm fat and lazy. So
I'm just staying quiet.
So a few years ago, I started an article series of training for Hadrian's Wall about the process of getting ready to do it. And, you know, it's walking. So it's like the training isn't that strenuous. I just need to walk, and I need to walk a lot, and I need to be able to do 15 to 20 miles in a day and not feel like I want to die. So a few years ago, I started doing that. I started going to the local national park and doing walks. And I got my range up to a 4 mile walk in a day. And then winter came, because winter comes every year and winter's terrible. And you can't go for, you can, it's just, it's really freaking cold. And then the park's closed.
And it's hard.
The paths get, you know,
they're
snow covered. And then, you know, the seasons go by. I half-heartedly start walks again and try to train. It just doesn't freaking happen.
Well, so, you can come work out with me.
Yeah, I don't want to do Orange Theory.
Wimp.
Yes. So
how are you ever going to do that walk if you don't legitimately put your mind to it?
I'm getting there.
Oh, folks, he really wants to do this, but you're going to have to help hold him to account. I mean, seriously.
So here's the plan. Okay. Plan for action. How am I going to do Hadrian's Wall? We're not traveling this year for various reasons, unless the Downton Abbey tour we're sponsoring happens. That's still up in the air. But we're not traveling this year, so I can't go this year. And you can only do the official walk from May to September, because they don't close the trail, but they don't want people to use the trail in the off season because it damages it for everybody else. So it's a national trail that's maintained.
Well, not only that too, unless you're really hardy, like that's way far north. Like I imagine the weather probably turns.
Well, we've experienced northern England now.
Well, we experienced northern England in October.
September. When the weather was good.
But it was cold.
It was rainy, too. So you kind of have to do it in the summer months. So, obviously, I can't do it this summer. So, my hope is that I'll do it next summer. So, if I'm going to do it next summer, I want to do two things to kind of kick this bucket list thing in the arse, as the British would say. Is I want to... So this summer, I'd like to go for walks with my kids and with my wife and with the family or by myself and try and build up my mileage. I'd like to maybe get back up to that 4 or 5 mile mark this year. Okay. And then I'd like to get the Thomas family to get a treadmill so that when October comes and we can't leave the house for 6 months.
I support this decision.
I'd like to keep the mileage up during the winter. And this is just walking. I'm not going to run on a treadmill. Running is awful. Why would I run on purpose?
Letters to Jonathan at Angletopia.net.
And then at some point, if I can meet my mileage goals this summer, I think I should be allowed to buy my plane ticket to go next summer. And because then if I have a hard deadline, then nothing can stop it, right? So Through the winter, I'll do the treadmill and keep up the mileage, try to increase it. And then when spring comes around, really whole hog it. And I figure I'll be ready to do the walk when I can do 16 miles in a day and then get up and do it again the next day and not die.
Yeah, well, and I think you've got to time your miles, too, like...
Yeah, because it's a the pace... I mean, you can do the walk at whatever pace you want. Some people, some people will even run it. But I've got several books on this, and, you know, it's a gingerly pace. You know, it's not you're going to take all day, and the whole point, this is one of those examples where the journey is a destination, not a specific place, so... You know, I don't have to walk. I don't have to walk at a fast pace. I just have to be able to do it.
Well, that's what. But my point is that, and I'm not meaning to offend, but you don't want to still be walking out there at 9 p.m. having set off at 9 a.m.
No, no.
And, like, so time does matter. To yeah, a certain
and,
extent.
And the routes that are laid out in the guidebooks I have will, like, if you do this many miles, you'll arrive at a nice pub for lunch. And if you do this many miles, you'll arrive at your B&B and eat. Like, so.
Ooh, pub lunch sounds so good.
Although I have a feeling eating a pub lunch and then wanting to get back on the trail is going to be a difficult challenge to overcome.
You've got to eat light. And then the last pub, you can, like, have a steak and a bottle of wine.
So
you're going to need it.
So that's the big one for me. And I want to do it, so...
Okay.
Kick my arse.
Folks, he's going to need your help. I've been kicking for 5 years, and...
I'm going to do the two other walks that I kind of want to do, since I segue into those, and then you go next.
Sure.
Now, if I can accomplish this walk, which is one of the shortest long-distance walks in Britain, next I'd like to do the Wainwright Coast to Coast. I have a book right here. For those who are unfamiliar, Alfred Wainwright wrote the best walking and fell guides of the Lake District that have ever been published. Like, his attention to detail is incredible. He hand wrote every single page and hand drew every single map.
Wow.
And, yeah.
That's so, dedication.
Yeah, he was very dedicated. Many people speculate he might have been on the spectrum, which would make a lot of sense. Because he was obsessed. He actually said, this is the day I'm going to finish doing all of these guidebooks. And he finished on that day.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So he's a very interesting character. And so one of his famous walks is the Wainwright Coast to Coast, which goes from the North Sea to the Irish Sea, or, you know, vice versa. St. Bee's Head to Robin Hood's Bay. And it's about twice as long as the Hadrian's Wall walk. So it takes about 2 weeks to do. And it goes through, the elevations are much, they change much more steeply. So it's a little more strenuous and a little bit more of a challenge. So, but I figure if I can do Hadrian's Wall, there's no reason why I couldn't do this.
I think I could do Hadrian's Wall, like, in the summer, but that, like, that one, I would have to train for.
Yeah. So there's that one, and then one that I really want to do with you is the Cotswold Way.
Oh, yeah. We've done pieces of it.
Yeah, which is about 130, 140 miles, and it literally goes from one end of the Cotswolds to the other. And it's a national trail that's maintained.
It's beautiful.
And a lot of people do this, but it takes about 2 weeks as well. So, like, you got to, like, train for it and block some time, and... I've heard that it's like Hadrian's Wall. It's kind of a gingerly pace. The elevations don't really change too much, but I mean, it's the Cotswolds. But that's something I think you and I would have a lot of fun doing because we like the Cotswolds a lot.
Yeah.
So.
The next thing on my list is the Scottish coast. So we went up to Scotland for the first time ever when we did the John O'Groats. Land's End to John O'Groats, and I absolutely fell in love with the eastern Scottish coast. Now, full disclosure,
I did too.
I haven't been down the western side. It might be just as beautiful. It might be more beautiful. But as we were driving up, like, these beautiful winding roads and cliffs, and just it reminded me a lot of actually, like, Northern California. But it was so beautiful, and we had this, like, idyllic fantasy where, like, you know, we'd stay in a stone cottage that has a fireplace and you could see the sea and we could write and, you know, we would have our groceries delivered and go down to the pub for dinner. And, like, I would love to legitimately do that, to just, like, maybe when our kids are much older, just be like, okay, like, we're going to take 6 months and we're going to rent a little cottage up in Scotland and that's all we're going to do. We're just going to write and we're going to sightsee and, you know, eat at the pub and just explore Scotland and enjoy the noise of the sea. I think that would be amazing.
I support this. Feeding into that, one thing I'd love to do is the North Coast 500 driving tour. It's, we heard about this while we were up there, and it's a drive that does, it's a 500 mile drive. That does a loop.
Those are British miles.
Yeah, and British miles.
Or Scottish miles, excuse me.
And it does a loop of the Northern Highlands.
Which are...
Yeah.
It
follows the coast.
So beautiful.
Along the way, and then, yeah, and then you drive. And so that's something we really would like to do. I love driving in Britain. It's, like, my favorite thing to do. And we'll talk about more about driving when we do our podcast on... getting around Britain, but it's just something that I'd really like to do. If you watched the Grand Tour on Amazon Prime, the Top Gear spinoff, the guys from Top Gear, they did an episode where they did a drive through the Scottish Highlands, and they started doing the North Coast 500, and then they kind of diverted off of it. And it gives you an idea of what it's like up there. And they said in the show that they've been all over the world, but they think that that drive is the most beautiful drive they've ever been on.
So. We would agree with them. We did some of the drive that they did.
Yeah.
And it was, I was going to say earlier, it's indescribably beautiful up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just endless sea. All the roads hug the coast, and there's mountains and
it's
castles.
It's not expensive.
No, it's not.
I mean, because
Northern Scotland is very affordable.
Well, and maybe because we have spent so much time in London, which is one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you will get sticker shock, but you go up to Northern Scotland and it's very affordable. So. Yeah. So that's mine.
One thing I'd love to do is, like I said, I'd love to do long distance driving in Britain. Well, now we've done Lansing and John O'Groats. It's like, what else is there? Cause
we could do it in the opposite direction.
Yeah. We could do John O'Groats to Lansing. I mean, we've talked about doing a guidebook cause there isn't a guidebook for the drive. So we'd have to do it again if we did that, but that's kind of a nebulous plan. That's just kind of something we've thought about. But I really want to do the Channel Shore. If you can see the map behind me in the video portion, I want to drive basically from, I guess, Ramsgate or Margate or Dover and drive west all the way to Land's End. It's a long drive.
I'm game.
But it takes in some of the most famous landscapes in southern England.
You drive it, and I'll sail it.
Okay.
That would be amazing.
But it takes in so many beautiful places, and I read a book by Tom Fort called The Channel Shore, where he biked it. And that's a really good book. So it made me really want to do it. I mean, it's full of seaside cities and towns and cliffs and whatnot, and it would take in Dorset, which I totally approve of.
Actually, that kind of feeds into one of mine, is I know that you have something really similar. When we were down in Cornwall for Land's End to John O'Groats, there were some really beautiful little Cornish villages. I would love to rent a cottage for the summer while our kids are still kids, and somewhere where we can walk to the shore, or it's just outside the door, and, you know, just kind of do a Cornish-British summer. I mean, Cornwall was amazing and beautiful in September. I can only imagine what it's got to be like when you can go sit down on the beach. They're just amazing.
Yeah, we haven't talked a lot about Cornwall in general, but we really...
Shh, don't tell anybody.
We really loved Cornwall. I'd really like to go back.
Yeah. I could see, like, if we ever settled in Britain, I think Cornwall would be in the running. I really do. It's so beautiful.
And you can fly to Newquay from Heathrow, so we wouldn't have to drive or take the train down.
And I could have a sailboat.
Speaking of Cornwall, I emailed Tregarthen Tea about stocking their tea here in the U.S.
Ooh. We'll have to let you know how that goes, folks.
Yeah, well, they're keen. The managing director wrote me back.
Ooh. Are you editing this out?
Why would I need to edit it out?
Oh, okay.
His name's Jonathan. I thought that was cool.
Oh, okay.
So they're
Hi, Jonathan at Tregarthen Tea.
Yeah, they're very keen. So hopefully we'll be stocking that soon. I'm waiting to hear back. So, I lost track.
So I said British Seaside Summer.
Okay. Feeding into that, and we talked about this the other day, actually. I would love to do the season.
That's on my list, too.
Oh, all right. Yay! Let's do it.
Okay.
For those unfamiliar, the season is basically the Great British Summer. Mm-hmm. And there's debate on when it starts in the year. Some say it starts with the boat race in April. Others say it starts properly with the Henley Regatta in May.
Go Oxford!
Yeah, go Oxford. That's right. It's this weekend.
I know. I can't wait. I'll be wearing my colors.
So, the season is the... And it's more... The season's more of an upper-class thing and a middle-class thing. And it encompasses all the big events of the Great British Summer. You've got the Henley Regatta. You've got Wimbledon. You've got the last night of the proms. And I'm forgetting all the other things. But there's events throughout the summer that the British social calendar kind of revolves around. And it's an offshoot of the...
Horse races?
The horse races, yeah. Cheltenham and...
Is Queen's Tea Party in there, too?
The Queen's Garden Parties. And then she also... her official birthday in June with the...
Yes.
The Trooping of the Colour.
Yep, I was...
Trooping the Colour, sorry.
Woo.
You gotta get it right or we'll get letters.
Hey, come on.
Get so, but yeah, like, if you know, there's actually a book about it called The Season.
I'm going to need to buy a lot of hats.
That's right. That's where hats are worn. And
it makes me think of My Fair Lady.
So, but it's something, so what I would love to do is go at the beginning of the season and stay the whole season and do all the things.
Do you want to stay in London for that or Windsor or?
Probably in the suburbs. Somewhere like Windsor would be ideal.
Somewhere where we have a garden, like a back garden, and we can just sit and
somewhere enjoy. That's calm.
Yes.
Because you have to be in London, because a lot of the things are in London.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
but we'd have to be close. If we stayed somewhere like Windsor, we can just take the train. It's 20 minutes to Paddington. You know.
Okay, but correct me if I'm wrong here. If this is like a high class thing, we're not gonna be rolling up on the train.
Oh, that's very common to take the train.
Really, like all dressed to the nines, with my big, my ridiculously big, beautiful hat.
There is first class on the trains, my dear.
Oh, this is true. This is true. I think of commuter train.
Then there's Glyndebourne, the outdoor opera festival. Like,
I'm game.
Yeah, so there's lots of wonderful things,
and you get to pack a British picnic to a lot of these things
because they're outdoors or...
And let me just say, the British picnic like no other. Four words: scotch egg, strawberries and cream. I rest my case.
That's the Wimbledon thing. That's what you do at Wimbledon. You have strawberries and cream.
Yep, I'm game.
So we'd like to just rent somewhere for the summer, go for the summer and do all these things that we can afford to do. And obviously, this would be a very expensive proposition. So the goal would be, hopefully, by the time we're able to do this, somebody else is paying for it through a book deal or whatever.
Like, or one of us has married a royal and is taking the other one along for fun. I don't know.
But yeah, it would be a thing that we would economically exploit for articles on the website, traveling. Like, we would make it would be a business proposition. So, like, you know, it wouldn't just be like us effing off for the summer in England.
Ooh, you went there. Yeah. But I noticed, like, look at how many of our bucket list things take place in the summer. And I wonder if that's because when we normally travel, we're not usually there in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I went last summer, and it's so nice in the summer.
We usually go off-season because it's more affordable.
It does get hot, but...
Like, it's hot here.
I have a whole chapter in my book on the Great British Summer.
Yeah, it is pretty great. I won't lie.
So, why don't you pick one next?
I really, I guess I have two more. I want to do the Scottish Islands. I'm a knitter.
I agree.
And so, like, there is a huge tradition of knitting, up on the Northern Islands. And I love how remote they are. I feel like as great as communication is these days and interconnectivity in a global society, these are all really important and great innovations, but sometimes the world is just really loud. And wouldn't it be amazing to just be able to basically just kind of check out, like go up to one of these little islands and...
We can only get to by boat.
Yeah, and just, you know, spend some time together as a family and you know, just kind of disconnect.
Yeah, we watched a show a few years ago about Fair Isle, about the people who live on Fair Isle, which is, everyone knows Fair Isle as the Fair Isle knit pattern. And
Knitting patterns.
And it's a little speck of an island in between or the Orkneys and the Shetlands in the middle of the North Sea. And you can only get there by boat or plane. And if it's cloudy, nobody gets there. And mm-hmm. it's literally one of the most remote places in Britain.
Well, look at Harris.
Yeah. Like that's the Western Isles.
I know, but they set the mark for Tweed. I mean, these are really tiny islands that made a global impact, which is amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see in the frame, but Fair Isles, a little speck there. Harris is
on the other side. I know, but somewhere. I would really like to do like a really good survey of the British Isles. I think that would be amazing.
I agree. Sorry, take that off my list too. Speaking of islands, I'd also like to do the Channel Islands, which are off the coast of France.
Yep.
They have a very interesting and unique history. Mostly because they were invaded by the Germans during World War II. So, like,
which
it's the only part of the, you know, Great Britain or United Kingdom that was occupied by the Germans.
So I didn't know that till just a couple of years ago, which I thought is just crazy.
Yeah, they did not have a good time during the war.
I don't think anybody had a good time during the war, honey.
There's a good movie that just came out last year that's on Netflix.
Is it the Guernsey?
The Guernsey Potato Pie Literary Society. It's a really long title.
It's a sweet
story. It's got Lily James in it.
It's really good.
It's a good movie, actually. I wouldn't mind watching it again.
Yeah, we'd endorse that one.
And then, continuing the island thing, I'd like to go to the Isle of Man.
Mm-hmm.
The Isle of Man is in between Ireland and Great Britain. It's kind of in the middle of the Irish Sea.
So that's not where all the footballers are? There's an island that, like, all the footballers live on.
What?
You don't know what I'm talking about. Like, it's a wealthy island. Is it... If it's not Guernsey...
Oh, you're thinking of Portland and Dorset.
No, I'm
the
not.
Island of...
Or maybe. I don't know.
Or it's the Poole Peninsula where...
There's, like, a bunch of...
It's the most
of...
expensive real estate in the world. Yep. No, that's not the Isle of Man.
Okay.
The Isle of Man is famous for the Isle of Man TT race.
For men?
Huh?
It's the Isle of Man... Oh my gosh, that fell flat.
Slow the uptake today. Wow. But it's a race. There's a road that goes... The ring road around the island, and it's a motorcycle race that... Yeah. Until a few years ago, Jeremy Clarkson actually owned a house on the Isle of Man.
You want to go see a motorcycle?
No, I don't want to see the motorcycle race. I want to see the island.
You're not a big motorcycle enthusiast.
No, I'm just saying for people who give them context.
I get it.
So that's... Okay, do you have one?
All right, here's my last one. I would like to stay somewhere long enough, close to London, so that I could go shop at their amazing markets. They're like Spitalfields and be able to like cook.
Borough Market.
And Borough Market, thank you. They have the most beautiful markets, and I would love to, like, when we go and we're in London and we're there on business, we're usually in a hotel, which is great because then dinner's taken care of for you. But I absolutely love to cook. Love, love, love to cook. And so we have spent a lot of time as I drag you through these markets going, oh, look, a cheesemonger. And oh, look at this. And look at I would. And it's almost painful to not be able to be like, I'll have a wedge of blue, please. A good wedge of cheddar. I feel like it's like Wallace and Gromit here, right? Cheese.
Cracking toast, Gromit.
Yeah, exactly. But it would be amazing to like, to go, like, source our food at the market and be able to, like, cook really amazing dinners. And maybe have dinner parties. Oh, my God, we could have dinner parties with our British friends. That would be amazing. Okay, I'll totally stop, like, being all girly over here. What are you doing?
I'm going to introduce them to our British cat.
Our British cat, who is an American cat.
Yeah. This is McGonagall. Named after McGonagall from Harry Potter. We had a cat named Harry Potter.
He was an orphan? Can I explain why he was named Harry Potter? Because it's the best story.
Okay.
Okay, so how he came into John's possession is not really important. He happened to find John one day.
I found him in a vacant house that we were cleaning the carpets in, and
his dad owns a carpet cleaning company,
and he made himself at home in the front seat while we were cleaning.
Okay, so
he was very friendly. He'd clearly been abandoned.
Like, I was in Chicago for the day, and I get this phone call from John going, "Honey, I brought home a cat. I had a cat when we moved in. We had just adopted a cat because John wanted one. So we had two, and now he had brought home a third." And I'm like, oh my God, like three cats in like 600 square feet? You are nuts! And so he brought the cat home and he put the cat in the bathroom. And he was like, babe, just go meet this cat. Like, if you really don't like him, like, we'll figure something out. Maybe my parents will take him. Like, I'm like, all right. And so I walked in. And he had, like, a notch, like, taken out of his ear. So I don't know if he got in a fight or it was a deformity or the vet had done it. No, because He wasn't fixed. So he had this notch. Like, it was almost like a zigzaggy notch. And so it made me think of Harry Potter. And so I said to John, I'm like, okay, here's the deal. We can keep him. But he's an orphan, and he kind of, like, his coloring reminded me of Harry Potter, like the boy with the brown and the glasses. And so we named him Harry Potter, and he was our orphan cat.
And all the other cats are dead now, so we can say he was our favorite cat.
She's as McGonagall walks out of the room.
Well, no, so he was our favorite cat.
I should say lumbers out of the room.
Yeah, she's a very large kitty.
Yeah.
So he was our favorite cat. He was like, he was everything you could hope for in a cat.
Super affectionate.
Super affectionate. He would eat my beard.
Which crazy, actually. Was actually really gross. But he was really, he was attentive. Like,
but he, you know, he was HP. He was Harry Potter. When we moved into this house 5 years ago, I mean, we had him for like 10 years.
Yeah.
He was an old guy. We moved into this house about 5 years ago when we bought it. And one day,
we just noticed, like, we couldn't find him.
He wandered off and never returned.
Yeah. We looked and looked, and we were heartbroken.
Yeah. I mean, he...
And so were our friends, which was crazy.
Yeah, like, he was very old. It was probably time anyway. And so we don't know what happened to him. Maybe he's made himself at home in one of our neighbor's houses. We just don't know it. But
probably. That would not surprise me. That would be very much how he rolls.
But he had a chip, but, you know... He never came home. And so, to circle back around why we have McGonagall, we got her from the shelter, and she looked like the cat that McGonagall is in the Harry Potter movies. And she's very, very full of herself.
Yes. Shall we say, as the British say, she has an air about her.
She has an air about her. And she had...
But she's so sweet.
Yeah, and she had big paws to fill. And so
and she has big paws.
And so the tradition now is that we name one of our rescue cats after a character from Harry Potter. So she's McGonagall.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if we'll ever name a cat Snape.
It'd have to be a black cat.
Yeah.
We had a black cat, but he died too.
Yeah, he was a rescue cat too, but there was something a little off.
He was a little off.
But we loved him just the same. Yeah. He was just... It's a little off.
Anyway, we're way off topic. No one really wants to hear about our cats.
Probably not.
But even our Anglophilia goes to our pets. Our dog laying at my feet, his name's Gromit. Our dog in the crate is named Winston, after Winston Churchill.
Folks, send help. I'm kidding.
Our other cat, Pearl, she's not named after a British thing.
No, she's named after a knitting technique.
Our basement cat who lives outside in the
basement. Who is like 35 years old.
Who's like, yeah, she's like 20 years old.
No joke. She is like the world's oldest living cat.
She's an orange furball. Her name's Elizabeth.
Yes, after Queen Elizabeth.
But she's an outdoors cat because she's got her claws and she likes to be outside. So she doesn't get to come in the house.
But she... We are responsible pet owners.
She lives in the basement. She comes and goes as she please.
And she's been fixed. And she has her shots. And,
she's,
you know.
She's well taken care of. Last year, I don't even think she went outside that much.
Do you blame her? Would you go out there? I'm not going out there. I spend 8 months of the year in this house. It's just, there's too much snow.
Yeah. Getting back to the bucket list.
Yeah, sorry, folks.
Where are we on time? Okay, we've got 20 minutes. Okay, so... One of the things that we have done was the sleeper to Scotland, or from Scotland, and
which was amazing, kind of like that you travel overnight, and you wake up in London.
It's like time travel. I have an article about it on the site. I'll put it in the show notes. The problem is we didn't really like.
It wasn't a super sleeper train. It wasn't a great experience, but it. Maybe because we didn't know what to expect.
That and I've got IBS, and so I was inflamed, and I had a very uncomfortable ride. I was in pain pretty much the whole way down. So I don't know if that would happen again on the sleeper train.
Sharing a cabin, that was not pleasant.
So on my list was doing the Cornish sleeper, which is an overnight train from London to Penzance. And because it takes like 6 or 7 hours, and I really wanted to do that, but now I'm not so sure if I want to do that. But
well, you also weren't.
Maybe I'll give it one more try.
You weren't sure though, too, if like the rocking of the train like aggravated your issues and like,
it had started,
contributed to motion sickness.
Yeah, it had started before we were on the train, so yeah, I don't. So maybe we'll give a sleeper train a try again. If you want to go to Scotland. I highly recommend doing the sleeper train.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an experience, and this year, all the trains are going to be new.
Yeah, they
the trains we were on were like 30 years old, so you could tell. But then they're getting brand new trains this year.
Can I say, it might have been dated, but it was clean.
Yeah, it was clean.
They were clean.
And they had phone chargers in the wall.
So.
Speaking of trains, I really like trains. Jackie does not, but I do.
It's not that I don't. It's just, it's a lot like the Anglophilia. It's like, all trains, all the time. Trains, trains, trains.
So, there are a couple train things I'd like to do. One of which is, I want to go to the top of Snowdonia, the tallest mountain in Wales. I'm not going to walk up the mountain.
Notice a trend here, folks.
Thankfully, the Victorians put in a narrow gauge railway that goes to the top of Snowdonia.
Oh, of course they did.
So, I'd like to take the train up Snowdonia. And then...
I'll wait for you in the bottom at the pub.
Come up, as long as it's clear.
Is there a pub up there?
There's a cafe, there'll be tea.
That wasn't my question.
And so, I'd love to there's a lot of heritage railways in Britain, heritage railways, I jokingly call railways to nowhere. Britain has a lot of disused railway lines, and train enthusiasts have reopened them.
Ooh.
Sorry, that's our water filtration system screaming. It happens every couple of hours. Keeps the pressure. The
noises of the Thomas household this podcast.
Yeah. The full gamut.
Yeah.
So, there are usually small lines that are like 5-10 miles. They're steam trains, usually old train cars, and they have a very vintage train experience that you would have had at the early 20th century. I've been on several of them already, and they're all kind of a type of how they are, and I like them. They're fun, so I'd like to go to all the heritage railways around Britain.
You'll find me at the pub.
There's like 50, so you know, I could just tick off a few every couple of years. I'd also like to drive a steam train.
Oh, good Lord. Somebody help me.
I'm kidding. You could do it.
I don't want to do it.
No, I'm just saying the Swanage Railway, like, they have driver days, experience days, where you pay them a large sum of money, and they'll...
goes to keep the rail service.
And they'll teach you how to drive a steam train, and they'll let you drive it.
Well, if the apocalypse happens, you will be our guy. You can drive the locomotive.
And then this one, which will probably be one you get dragged along on, I'd like to visit every tube station.
Again, I'll be at the pub.
In one of two ways. I'd like to do the tube challenge.
Okay, so we have to do this twice then?
Well, hold on. Let me lay out the plan here. I'd like to do the tube challenge, which is the thing where you visit them as quickly as possible in one day. And just write all the lines. But I remember a couple years ago, I wanted to do along the lines where we write each tube line and stop at every stop and like along the way and do a video and article series about it. So I'd like to do it the fast way and the slow way. So the along the lines way will take several years, obviously. But I'd like to eventually visit all the tube stations.
You have fun with that. I'm not knocking what your dreams here, and I'm not knocking your bucket list choices.
It's just there's so much to see in London that is outside of Zone 1.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
The only way is to just go forth and explore.
And the tube is great, and like the tube is beautiful, but the older I get, like, I've got issues with claustrophobia on the tube, and yeah, I wish you the very best with that.
Along the lines of driving, this one's a weird one that people are gonna be like, why do you want to do this? Look, admit I'm a strange person.
You basically want to do all the rail lines in Britain.
No, I didn't say I'm going to do all the rail lines, all the heritage rail lines, all the actual rail lines. Like, I've seen the video series on YouTube with Jeff and Vicky. That's enough for me. Like, I don't want to do it myself.
Wow. Okay.
I do want to ride some trains, but
okay, please, no more trains.
I want to drive the M25.
Oh, this is kind of fun.
The M25 is the orbital road around London.
Right. Nope, that's Birmingham. Yeah, there's London, yeah, right there.
There's the M25 right there. It's like 200 and some miles. You can do it in a couple hours as long as you don't have traffic. The joke is that the M25 is Britain's longest car park.
We should do a collab with the guys from the Green Tour, and they can build me a pub in the back of the car to the M25.
But it mostly goes through greenbelt land, yeah. So there's a lot of beautiful landscapes. It crosses a huge, beautiful bridge. Like, there's stuff to see along. It's not just driving the road. So
we've spent a lot of time on the M25.
Yeah,
usually
around Heathrow.
Yeah.
I once went when I was staying in Tunbridge Wells. I had to take it from Sevenoaks all the way to Heathrow. It was at 5 in the morning. That was the only one on the road.
Oh, well then, that's how you avoid the traffic. You get up.
Yeah, I think I got there in like an hour.
At an ungodly hour and just go for it.
So I'd like to drive the M25. I'd also like to visit every National Trust property.
Okay, I'm game for that.
Because there's only like 400 or some, I think. So
only 400.
And we've been to a big chunk of them already.
Actually, we have.
So yeah, I'd like to do that.
I'll come with you to do that.
You know, I love stately homes, but they don't just own stately homes. They own mills and
parks and all kinds of stuff.
Factories and parks and all kinds of interesting things. So I'd like to just visit them all, mostly because I have a membership at the Royal Oak and it's free to do that.
And I think that it's impossible to get bored at a National Trust property. Like, you have to try and be bored at that
point.
There's
so much to do. They put a lot of work into making it an all-day experience. And I don't want to get on about the National Trust. We have a podcast from a few weeks ago about the National Trust. But it's something I'd like to do. Because you can actually get a little passport book in the gift shop. And you can have them stamp it at each property.
I think that's meant for children, though, right?
No, it doesn't have to be for children.
Again, not knocking your dream here.
One of the things that was on my list, they did a few years ago back in 2016, or was it 2017?
I don't know.
It all runs together. As I did a summer course at Oxford, I'd like to do that again. They occasionally do a Churchill course. I really like to do that. Or, you know, get a graduate degree from Oxford. something I don't need to do or could afford to do or probably don't even have the GPA that would let me in on. But, you know.
You're very smart and you did very well in college, so don't knock yourself.
If anything, I'd like to do another summer course because I, like, Oxford in the summer is so lovely.
Well, isn't that, that's like key Britishness right there.
Yeah, like it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And the golden stone and the golden summer sunlight. And it doesn't get dark till like 10 o'clock at night. And there's so much going on in Oxford. There's concerts and an outdoor theater. And like when I was there for my last course, like there was just so much to see and do. Like, it was amazing. And then when it rains, like on the stone, and it's great. Like, I really want to go back to Oxford this summer. And there's a great bookstore there. So I'd like to do one of those again. And then, have you thought of anything more while we've been sitting here? All right, then it's time for the final two. The big ones. The big one is I would like to fly in a Spitfire.
That's really cool.
For those unfamiliar, a Spitfire is the iconic airplane from World War II that is largely responsible for winning the Battle of Britain, although the Hurricane played a role. I'm not knocking the Hurricane.
Letters to Jonathan at Anglotopia.
But it's the Spitfire is like part of that whole World War II mythology the British had built around themselves. It's a symbol of the Battle of Britain. It's
Are you sure you want to use the word mythology there?
It's a symbol of British design and engineering. I'll give you that. And they look cool and they sound amazing when those Merlin engines are fired up.
When we were there for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, this is the craziest thing. Like, we had Will with us, and he was like maybe 18 months. And so we went down to the park to go get a spot down by the river, but it was so crowded that it was like scary, like a crush of people. And we had like a kid in a stroller, and it was just too much. So we went back to our flat on the Brompton Road, not far from Harrods, and we were like high up. We weren't like a penthouse, but and so we watched it on telly, which is hilarious, with tea and a fire. Even though it was June, it was freezing and raining outside. And then, so the announcer said on the TV, like, oh, and get ready for
the Battle of Britain Memorial flight.
Yeah, get ready. And, like, before we could see it, we could feel it. Like, the whole flat, like, vibrated. And I said to John, like, and then they came right over the flat. And, like, we went from a vibrating, like, to a rattle. And it was by far one of the coolest experiences. That was super, super neat.
The Battle of Britain Memorial Flight is a wing of the RAF that maintains their classic planes for special events and whatnot. And they usually bring them out for like the Diamond Jubilees or the Royal Weddings. I saw them at the Royal Wedding as well. And usually it's a Lancaster bomber, which is the bomber that the famous Dam Busters raid bomber, a Spitfire, and a Hurricane. And when those things fly by, they...
Like, you feel it all the way through your
The British have a phrase for it. They call it the sound of victory. Lay down, Gromit. Sorry, he's demanding his dinner. It's dinner time. He's a crotchety old man. He wants to eat right on schedule. So there are two companies now that have taken the trainer Spitfires that have two seats, and you can pay to have a flight experience in a Spitfire, fully restored with the Merlin engine and everything. It costs about, last time I checked, it was like £2,500, which is like $4,000. It's a lot of money, which is why it's a bucket list thing.
I don't think any of the things that we've said here won't cost a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean,
unfortunately, it's
a bucket list. It's a dream list. And so one of these days, I'm going to save my money and I'm going to go do this. Maybe we'll do it during the summer. We do the season because you should do it in the summer. And they take you on a flight over the White Cliffs of Dover. They film it for you. How cool you get to put that on the flight suit and like have your own little, you know, you can hum Land of Hope and Glory while you're on your flight.
I know you totally would.
Yeah, and so that's something I really really want to do. And if anybody from those companies is listening and would like some free promotion on angletopia.net, I will write an article series that you will love if you would like to just, you know, invite
sponsor
me on board. I am not above shamelessly using my website to get things. I'm not above it.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I really want to fly to Spitfire. That's yeah. And then my final thing, she's going to roll her eyes. It's not really a travel thing. It's more of an Anglophile thing. Is one day I want to become a British citizen. So, one day I want to raise my hand and make the oath to...
You are going to get so many letters.
The queen, or probably be a king by then.
Again, awkward. More letters.
Because it's a long term, it'll probably take 20 or 30 years for this to even happen, because we have to move there for one, which is very difficult. And then we have to stay there for, I think it's 7 years.
And we have kids.
Yeah. And
kids can travel and stay and move, and
it's just not complicates it. One day I want to become British, and
Can I just tell you, you're British?
when I was at the RWI, the author sponsor was sitting across from me at the farm table, and I was wearing my green hat and my country garb with my boots.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Jonathan, you really do look like an English countryman." It was the nicest thing anybody's ever said to me.
Well, you know what's kind of funny about that, too, is... Okay, so because you're ginger, like in a crowd, I can spot John right away. In Britain, you look like every man. Like, you are hard to spot in a crowd, which I think is really funny, actually.
My family did the ancestry DNA. I'm 75% British, so... Pale skin, red hair, I fit right in, right? So, I've... Another shameless plug for the book... there's a chapter in the book about this. One day we want to own a cottage somewhere. We want to be, you know, live a British life, become British, get a British passport. And, you know, one day I'd like to just come to Britain from America and go through the citizen line and be welcomed home. And, yeah, I mean...
Do you need a tissue?
So, yeah, can't think.
That's our bucket list.
That's our bucket list. It's a lot of things. Oh, forgot something.
I think the dog is going to eat you.
We want to do the transatlantic liner.
Oh yeah, that would be really fun to do one of these days.
The canard. Do it one way and fly back, but
although I don't know, like there was that big news article, was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
Ship in Norway with the weight,
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a reason we invented airplanes, so I don't necessarily really want to do this, but I've heard from people who have done it. They say that
it's really special.
It's a really special thing to do, and it's it kind of feeds into that whole luxury hotel experience.
Quiet, Gromit. We'll feed you in a minute.
Feed you in a minute. That luxury hotel experience you like. I mean, it's literally the lap of luxury on the open sea.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So.
It doesn't have a sail.
It's not a proper boat, right?
It doesn't have a sail. Not that I would really be interested. I don't know.
So, what would be on your Britain bucket list? Feel free to leave a comment on the YouTube channel or on the Facebook post that will go out with us or on the website.
We'd love to hear
your ideas.
If you've done any of these experiences.
Yeah, if you've done any of these, we'd love to hear any tips or advice. That's one of the great things about running this website is we get lots of great advice when we ask for it. So feel free to send us any ideas and what your bucket list things are or any tips. So thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.